We're holding on Samach Amud Beis, the last line. The Mishnah had talked about a number of different things that we have, takanos mipnei davkei shalom. So this is related to throughout the last couple, or throughout the last almost 30 blocks, we've been talking about takanos mipnei tikkun olam, to allow society to function properly. But here, we're now in this Mishnah, we were talking about things that related to that, mipnei davkei shalom, in order to promote peace between one yid and another. So we had a number of those. So now at the bottom of Samach Amud Beis, we're continuing analyzing another one in the Mishnah. We said, Chmitzodis chayev ofis v'dogim yesh behen fula. We said if a person traps something, a wild animal or a bird or a fish in a trap, if somebody else were to take that thing out of the trap, then the Tanakhama said it would be mishum gezem mipnei davkei shalom. That it would be because of davkei shalom, you're not supposed to take it. And so it would be considered gezel on those grounds. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi in Mishnah had said it would be gezel gomer, it would be complete theft. So the Gemara points out, it depends what kind of trap we're talking about. But uzli, if we're talking about traps made out of threads, so woven traps, where Rashi points out they have an inside, or oihari, which are similar ones, but they're woven out of grasses. So there you have the creature actually goes into the trap. Well, then the trap is considered a keli. Kula amale pligi. Then there's no argument that it would be considered gezel, and not only midrabbanan, like we said in Pnei Dakei Shalom, but even midaraisa, because once it's considered a keli, we have a rule that kil yishaladim koinaloi, that a person's keli is able to acquire something for him when it's in when it's in a place of hefker. Obviously, we have to be talking about over here, the person didn't put his traps on somebody else's property. So as long as it's not on somebody else's property, when it's in Rishos HaRabim or whatever, then his keli can be koina for him. So in that case, then his keli is koina the animal or bird or what have you, and therefore somebody else were to take it out of that, it would actually be gezel gomer. He pligi belechi v'kukri. The machlokas is, for example, he caught it with a hook. So let's say a fish hook or kukri, which Rashi describes, or other kinds of traps. So there's no base kibble, they're not considered a keli. So then, in that case, you can't say that the object, you can't say that the animal went into the keli, such that you can talk about whether it was koina for him or not. So therefore, so the Tanakhama is going to say that it's only mipnei davkei shalom, and Rabbi Yossi is going to say it's gezel gomer, but even gezel gomer, according to Rabbi Yossi, doesn't mean midaraisa, again, because there was nothing for it to be koina for him, it's strictly midraban. So the Gemara says, so it continues, Metzia Schera Shot of a Fuller of Yossi and the Gezel Gomer. Then we had in the Mishnah where a Schera Shot of a cotton picks up a lost object. So the Tanakhama had said that you can't take it from him because of Davkei Shalom. And again, Rabbi Yossi had said it's Gezel Gomer. So here also everybody agrees that it's Derabbanan. So I'm going to fist a Gezel Gomer Midivrehem. It means in this and in the other cases as well, it means it's Gezel Gomer Midivrehem. It's Midrabbanan. It's considered Gezel because the Chachamim don't want, like this, a Cheresh Shot of a cotton is going to pick up something and think that he got it. And meanwhile, somebody else is going to say, yeah, it's not yours. You have no das anyway, and take it from him. And that's going to cause fights. So therefore, according to the Tanakhama, according to the Tanakhama, it's Mipnei Davkei Shalom, and according to Rabbi Yossi, Gezel Gomer. So the Mayan Nafkamina, what's the difference whether we say it's Mipnei Davkei Shalom or whether we say it's Gezel Gomer? The answer is Lohitziyab Dayonin. Can the Cheresh Shot of a cotton, or in the previous case, can the owner of the trap go to the Dayonin to get back the thing that he was supposed to have? According to Rabbi Yossi, he could. According to the Tanakhama, you can't. It's only Mipnei Davkei Shalom, but once it's done already, then Beis Din is not going to interfere, and he'll be able to keep it. And for that matter also, Rashi also adds that the other person who took it, the other person, so now Rabbi Yossi would agree that it's not considered gezel to the extent we know, for example, a gazlan is posel la'edus. It's not going to be considered gezel to that extent. Even Rabbi Yossi is going to agree that he would be actually over on the lav midarai, so even posel la'edus. So the question is just, would the other guy be able to go to the dayanim and ask them to get back the animal or the other thing? According to Rabbi Yossi, yes, and according to the Chachamim, no. Then we had another one in the Mishnah. This one, actually, when we learned the Mishnah on Nuntes Amud Beis, I skipped this line by mistake. The Mishnah had said, "Oni hamanakif berosh hazayis that when you have an oni who's collecting olives, who's literally menakif means knocking off, so it actually translates menakif as cutting. So he's cutting off olives on the top of the tree because, in other words, on a tree, you also have to leave leket, you also have to leave peah on a tree. So in the case of olives, that means you're going to leave over some of the olives at the top of the tree and the aniyim will be able to get them. So now when you have an oni, he's going and cutting off the olives on the top over there. So the Mishnah had said, Masha tafta gezel mipnei dauke shalom. The olives that are under the tree are also because of gezel, because of dauke shalom. Again, even though the oni has not actually made a kinyan on them, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, nevertheless, it's still mipnei dauke shalom not to take it from him. And again, Rabbi Yossi, I mean, gezel gomer, Rabbi Yossi had said it's gezel gomer. It's actually considered stealing, again, the midrabanan. So what are we talking about? It's a ton of, we learn in a braisa, im likit v'nosem b'yad, if the oni actually picked the olives by hand and then threw them down onto the ground, well, then once they came into his hand, then he was actually koyin to them, harei ze gezel gomer. So now if somebody else were to take it from him, it would be considered gezel gomer, because by taking them in his hand, then he did in fact make a kinyan on them. Tosfos points out the chiddush of it is you would think, I mean, he only held them for like a fraction of a second before he threw them down. Nevertheless, and maybe even he didn't even realize that the Rashba adds, in other words, that he doesn't even realize that by holding them in his hand for that fraction of a second he's actually being coined to them. Nevertheless, he does. And now, if somebody were to take those olives that are on the bottom that are underneath the tree, then he would be doing gezel midarkos. So the Gemara tells a story. Rav Kahana have a ka'ozel l'hutzel. Rav Kahana was one time walking to the city of Hutzel, and why it's important to mention that he was walking to the city of Hutzel specifically, we'll say in a minute. He saw a certain person over there was throwing ufi. Now ufi means branches. So Rashi understands that what we mean is he was throwing branches at the tree in order to knock fruit off the tree. The karnatra and tamri and dates are falling off because he's knocking them down with the sticks that he's throwing. Also, kamankit for ochil. So Rav Kahana was taking some of the fruit and eating it. He didn't realize that the person had made a kinyan on it. Now, what about, isn't there the matter of dauke shalom? We'll talk about that in a minute. Omalei, the guy on top of the tree, or the guy not on top of the tree, according to Rashi, he's throwing sticks at it from the ground. The guy says to Rav Kahana, Chozi Mar, Rebbe, look, to be a Dai Shaditinu. I threw them down with my hands. In other words, I actually put my hands on them in order to take them. I didn't just they're not just on the ground because of the sticks I threw. But Pashtos, I guess we have to understand that like he was each time. Maybe he didn't want the fruit to get squashed before it fell on the ground, so therefore he's holding it with his hands, and therefore like he'd catch him with his hands and then let him fall on the ground so he can take the next one. So I actually had them in my hands. Omalei sort of kind of says, my astra did Rav Yoshi ata. I see you must be from Rav Yoshi's place. Namely, Hutzel was a city in Babel where Rav Yoshi in a previous generation had been the Rav. So that must be because how do you know this din is because Rabbi Yoshia goes and teaches such things to the rabbi. He goes and teaches them din and like that, and therefore you must have learned that from him. So Rav Kahana said regarding Rabbi Yoshia, the pasuk that tzaddik yisod olam, tzaddik is the foundation of the world. In other words, thanks to him, even the simple yidden in this area know this kind of halacha. So now, what was going on over here? So according to Rashi, that we're talking about that he was throwing sticks at the tree. Then the fact is, Rav Kahana had every reason to think that. According to Rashi, the point would be that Rav Kahana was figuring it's only Dauke Shalom, so therefore it's not a big deal to take them. So like we said, Dauke Shalom is just that. It would be a nice thing to do, but it's not like you have to do it that way. Tosfos though. However, Tosfos doesn't like that. The fact is, Rav Kahana should be concerned about Dauke Shalom too, no? So Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that the ufi that the guy is throwing doesn't mean he's throwing sticks. It means that he's throwing down, he's knocking down off the tree branches. So in other words, we would have to understand the guy is actually on top of the tree and throwing down branches, and dates are falling off together with the branches. So Rav Kahana figured the guy is mainly after the branches. The fact that the fruit is falling down seems to be incidental, so maybe he doesn't care about it. So therefore, Rav Kahana figured there's no problem with taking it. But then the guy says that, no, I was actually trying to get the fruit as well. And so there is Gezel involved over here as well. And therefore he asked them not to take it. And then there's another explanation that Amban and some other Rishonim say that Rav Kahana thought the guy is a goy. We're going to have in the next Mishnah, there is to a certain extent, there is a matter of doubt that Shalom was goyim, but not necessarily to the extent that you're not necessarily to the extent that these things that we're saying that you should not do apply with them. So therefore, Rav Kahana in that case figured that they're fair game for the taking. And then when the guy tells them, I took them with my hands, then Rav Kahana realized he's actually a yid and he had been by Rav Yoshi as shiurim and he had learned this din. Okay. Now we said in the Mishnah, we don't object to goyim taking leket shitcho peya, even though it's really meant for yidin, because of darkei shalom. So turn on our bottom, we learn on a brisa in this connection. We support goyish poor together with the Jewish poor. In other words, when we're giving out tzedakah to the Jewish poor, then we include the goyim as well. The same way when we're visiting sick Jewish people, we visit the goyim together with them also. Pashtus, I guess, you imagine a chaplain in a hospital, let's say, for example, you know, he's going around from one room to another. Let him go visit the goyim as well. The COVID Mesi Nachrim in Mesi Yisrael, you bury goyish dead along with Jewish dead. Now, here it doesn't mean, obviously, that you bury them together. You know, you don't bury Jews and goyim in the same place. But what it means is, in other words, while you're working on burying, here you have different Rishonim discuss. Rashi just says it means that if you find dead people, and some of them are Jews and some of them are goyim, don't just bury the Jews and leave the goyim alone. Bury the goyim as well. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn the Rashba and the Ritva. Learn that it means even if the goyish bodies are there by themselves, nevertheless bury them as well. What it means, im, means the same way as you would take care of Jewish bodies, the same way you take care of these. You find, in fact, in the Psukim, when it comes to Melchamas Gogomog, actually, we have a couple of examples of this. You find where it says, when David fought a war against Edom, it says, we have Kapitel Samach Tilim, talks about it by Yoshev Yoyah Vayachaz Edom the game Melach Shnei Mas Olaf. Anyway, the Psukim mentioned in Sefer Shmuel by Yatz David Shame that David made a name for himself when he did this. And what was the name? Rashi explains over there, based on a medrash, that he and his soldiers buried all the dead of Edom, that they killed them in war, but they didn't just leave them to be eaten up by wild animals or whatever. They actually went and buried them, and that made a great name, made a great Kiddush Hashem, that people said to themselves, look how Jews treat even the bodies of their enemies, that they're so careful with the dignity of them to bury them. So that's one example. Another example is actually by Melchamas Gog Ummagog, where it says a similar kind of thing. It says that after the aftermath of the war, it says that people are going to be going around and burying all of the bodies. It says in the pasuk, the same idea. It'll be a name for them that people will realize how Jews treat even their enemies and make the body, even the bodies of their enemies, and make sure to bury them. So here we have a similar kind of thing that we do that with Smithnei Gadka Shalom even at other times. Okay. Mishnah says, Mash'elas isha l'chaber. Here's more dinim about Gadka Shalom. Mash'elas isha l'chaber to achashuda al shvius. Suppose a woman has a friend who is suspect about the dinim of shvius. Now, one of the dinim of shvius in particular is that after there comes for each kind of produce, there comes what's called zman habir, the time when that kind of produce is not available in the fields anymore, and then the din is as long as such kind of produce is available out in the wild for animals to eat, then you're allowed to have it in your house. But the rule is kol l'chayim nasada. Once it's gone, once that particular type of fruit or produce is gone from the fields, and wild animals don't have access to it anymore, then kali l'behem tacham in a bias, then you have to get rid of it from your house for yourself and for your animals. So it's called shasabir. Each kind of fruit and vegetable that's subject to the dinim of Shemitah has a different shasabir for this purpose. Every year during Shemitah, and after it, they publish tables in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, giving the different times based on estimates. What beer consists of exactly? You have a machlokes rishonim. The Rambam holds that it literally means you actually have to get it out of your house and eat it or destroy it or whatever. Many of the other rishonim hold it just means you have to take it out of your house, declare it hefker, and then at that point you'd actually be allowed to take it back in and then continue eating it. Anyway, here you have a person who is choshed on that, who's suspect that they don't keep those dinim. So now, for example, so she'll have wheat, let's say. She wants to grind it, or she wants to sift it, or whatever. So what kinds of tools, what kinds of kitchen tools are you allowed to lend such a person without it being a problem of the machzik yidei over avera, that you're supporting and abetting somebody in doing an avera? So the Mishnah says, mash'elas isha l'chavetach shudah l'shvias. A woman is allowed to lend to a friend of hers who's suspect about these dinim of shvias, that she keeps the produce beyond the time of the year. She's allowed to lend her nafa, a sieve, or kvara, and a sifter. A nafa and kvara are both used for sifting things, but a nafa is usually used for sifting flour, and a kvara is a coarser one that's used for sifting grain. Anyway, v'rechayim, she can also lend her millstones to grind the grain, v'tanur, or an oven. So all of those things are made out of shalom. So now Tosfos has a long discussion over here about the question, why do we need Mipnei Dafke Sholem? Isn't there a better reason? Not necessarily is the grain that she's going to be grinding or sifting or whatever using these tools, not necessarily is it actually from Shavuos. The fact is, we shouldn't assume that this woman has exclusively wheat of Shavuos. The fact is, she may have wheat from other years as well, which is perfectly mutter. So in that case, wouldn't that be reason enough to allow us to lend her tools and things like that, because she's not necessarily doing it with something of Isser. So Tosfos says actually that the way Rashi is saying is Rashi doesn't make that distinction, so it would seem according to Rashi that it doesn't matter. It's only the reason it's allowed is made Dafke Sholem. And so Rashi says at the end of the Mishnah that even that when it's the time of the Aveda itself, you wouldn't be allowed to, but when it's not, then if Nedak is Sholem, you're allowed to. On the other hand, Tosfos points out that Tosfos brings a discussion about this and says that actually here, evidently, we're talking about, we know that in fact she doesn't have any other produce other than produce of Shemitah. So you're talking about, let's say, for example, enough time has passed. So let's say, for example, I don't know, imagine you have that the year after Shemitah, let's say there was a drought or something, and therefore you know you don't have any grain of that year. So at this point, any grain that she has after Zman HaBir is necessarily going to be left over from Shemitah. So that's why, only because of Dafke Sholem, are you allowed to lend it to her. But if it hadn't been for that, then you wouldn't. But it's true, Tosfos is saying that if there was reason to think that she had other produce as well, then in fact it would have been mutter even when Dafke Sholem is not relevant. Tosfos also mentions the point that, based on Yerushalmi, that there is also a consideration. You have to consider, can each of these things be used for other purposes b'chlal that are not even for Tevuah? For example, conceivably the sieve, the Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, conceivably the sieve, for example, could be used to sift sand. And the millstones to grind might be used to grind up various kinds of herbs and things like that, for dyes or things like that and so forth. So you have that consideration as well. But all told, here our Mishnah necessarily is talking about where there's nothing else, you know for a fact she's using it to grind grain, let's say, and you know that the only grain she has is what's left over from Shavuos. So you're allowed to do that. The Mishnah says, "Mipnei Dafke Sholem." Ava like Torah, like Titchan Ima. However, the woman would not be allowed to to sift out, to pick out the grade, or to grind with her, or the other kinds of malachas, because that would actually be helping her directly with the aveda. Where again, we have to assume we're talking about an aveda over here, because we have to assume that that as Tosfos said, the only produce she has is of shvius. So therefore, so to actually help her with it would be maseyeye de over aveda, and you can't do that. Continues the Mishnah in a similar vein. A wife of a chover is allowed to lend the wife of an amaoretz who is not so careful with the dinim of tumah v'tahara. She is allowed to lend her a sieve or a sifter. Now Tosfos says, so why doesn't it mention the other things as well? Why doesn't it mention the millstones in the oven? So Tosfos says, okay, it might be one of those examples where the Mishnah mentioned them in the first half, and we're meant to understand that it applies in the second half as well. It doesn't have to repeat the whole list each time. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is that with an oven, you're not going to want to lend an Amma Oretz, because an Amma Oretz is not careful with the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. So you lend them a sieve or a sifter, big deal. Even if they're metame it, then fine. You'll dip it in the mikveh, and that'll be that. But an oven is generally made out of cheras, out of earthenware, and the din is that you can't tovel it. The din is, as the posuk says, tanu v'kirayim yurtatz, so you have to break it. So therefore, so people are not usually going to want to lend their oven to an Amma Oretz, because then if it becomes tameh, there's no way to make it tahor unless by breaking it, and you don't want to do that. And therefore, so then it doesn't mention the millstones either, even though that consideration doesn't really apply to them. The millstones may not even be mekabel tumah at all, but the two things kind of go together. More so, the Rechaim and Tanuk that tend to go together more so than Nofo Kvara, then so therefore the Mishnah might have listed only those. Which Tosfos also adds, by the way, now if you have if a person is choshud on Shavias, shouldn't they be choshud on Taras as well? And in fact, there's a Mishnah in Bechoros that says just that. And the answer is, when we say they're choshud on Tumah, we mean they're choshud that they'll eat their fruit, that they'll eat their produce, even though it's Tomei. Doesn't mean necessarily that they themselves are choshud that they're going to be Tomei and be Metabe things. That they're going to be Tomei and they're going to be Metamei the Kaili, not necessarily, and therefore there's much less of a problem with that. So therefore, somebody who's choshud ala Shvius, you won't necessarily mind lending them an oven, but somebody who's choshud on that they themselves, and I'm already submitted a bonus, considered Tomei, because they're not careful, if you're in the Tomei Vatara, such a person you wouldn't want to lend an oven, close for points out. Anyway, so you're allowed to do that, again, because that's not the machzik yidei over aveira, because there's no aveira involved necessarily in preparing the food like that. And even b'techenes or makedes ima, unlike in the previous case with shvius, the wife of the chaver would even be allowed to grind or to sift the grain with her, because there's no issu being done yet. The grain or the flour is not makabel tuma yet. So now the Gemara is going to ask why. I mean, an Amma Oretz is usually choshud on Maisris as well, so don't you have the problem that you're helping her to prepare food of Tevel, which we're not allowed to do? We'll deal with that in the Gemara, but right now we're saying, as far as Tumah V'Tahara, there's not an issue. Avam Shiftatel Samnayim, but once she puts water into the flour, where at that point that's Mekabel Tumah, Loi Tigaima, at that point she's not allowed to touch it with her anymore. L'fishei Machzikin Yidei Over Aveira, because you're not allowed to support and abet somebody who's doing an Aveira. And at this point, as the Gemara is going to end up explaining, you're going to have the Chala is going to become Tameh, and therefore that would be a problem. You can't do that. You can't help with that. Now all of these things that we said in the Mishnah are only Mifnei Davke Shalom, which means, in other words, again, Rashi says this, that we're allowing them to this, that we're allowing you to lend them kalim and to help them outside of the time of the Aveira itself is only Mifnei Davke Shalom. In other words, the implication of Rashi would seem to be that if there's no Davke Shalom involved, then you wouldn't have a heter to do that. There wouldn't be Davke Shalom, I don't know, but whatever, suppose there was, for whatever reason, so then it wouldn't, then you tack that point that actually you wouldn't have that heter. Continues the Mishnah, now you're allowed to support the efforts of Goyim doing Shemitah. They're not chayev in the dinim of Shemitah, so if they're doing field work, if they're doing agricultural work, doing Shemitah, then you're allowed to support them. Rashi explains that at this point, we're going to assume that it means to actually help them out. Let's say, you know, the guy's plowing and he needs help plowing, then you'd be allowed to do that. The Gemara is going to discuss. We'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that that's not necessarily so. And that actually what it means is just that you're allowed to congratulate them and then wish them good luck or whatever. We'll see about that in the Gemara on Daf Samach Beis. Anyway, Ava lo yudei Yisrael, but you're not allowed to do that with a yid. If you have a yid if you had a yid is plowing on Shabbos or doing some other aveda on Shabbos, then you or shmita or whatever, then Shabbos or shmita or any aveda like that, you wouldn't be allowed to say verbally to them good job or something like that, because that would be machzik yudei over aveda. B'sholem b'shlomim, no doubt b'sholem, and here's another din. Always doing shmita or not, you're allowed to say shalom to a goy. Now, even though shalom is a name of Hashem, and you would think, why are you using it on a goy? Nevertheless, that's allowed. Nedavke shalom, and again, in order to promote peace between people, in this case, between Jews and goy. When we said in the Mishnah, by the way, when we're saying that in the case of the one who's choshed on Shavuos, that you're not allowed to actually do the work with her, so the problem is because she's going to be eating food that's also, if it's after beer, and if you're not supposed to be eating it, and so therefore you're not allowed to help. But on the other hand, when it comes to making the dough, so you're allowed to help her by the beginning of it, because at this point, nothing is makabel tumah yet. But again, once she puts in the water, then it's going to be makabel tumah, and then as we're going to see in the Gemara, then already it's masiyeh de'ravera to help. So the Gemara starts off, maishna reisha, maishna seifa. So what's the difference between the reisha and the seifa? Where in the reisha, we're saying that that you're not allowed to help this woman who's choshed ala shavias, to grind or to sift or whatever, whereas in the sefer we're saying you are allowed to grind and sift the flour with her. What's the difference? So now, according to Tosfos that we said before, that in the case of Shavuos, it was talking about where the only produce she has is Shavuos fruit. So Tosfos says, and in that case, what's the question? And nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming that we should have more reason. We should also have a reason in the case of an Amei Oretz. We ought to consider that the Chazaka is, after all, that Amei Oretz don't take Maiser, and therefore we should consider, and they don't take Chala, and therefore we should consider the produce to be Tevel. And then, therefore, the Gemara is asking the same way as by Shavuos, we have a strong reason to assume that this produce is from Shavuos. Why shouldn't we, by the same token, have a strong reason to assume that this produce of the Amei Oretz is Tevel, and therefore, again, it can't help with it? And yet, we see in the Mishnah that you could, so why? So Abaya says, because the fact is, most Amei Oretz do take Maaser, so it's really only a concern with Rabbanon, because you have a Miut Motzu, you have a significant minority of Amei Oretz who don't take Maaser, and because of that, you have the whole concept of Dmai and so forth. But in this case, then we're not going to worry about it, says Abaya. Rava gives a difference. Rava says, in fact, we do have to be concerned that even though we know, now it is true that Rava himself holds in other Gemaras, he does agree with that concept. However, he says that might not be enough in over here for us to be able to say that that we should therefore be allowed to help the Amei Oretz with the preparation of the food. So in other words, Abaya is not concerned. About the miut of Amei Oretz. Rava is concerned about the miut of them. So therefore, he would say, Rashi says, you have to consider as though it's at least when it's an Issur Torah. So therefore, he would consider it in effect as though it was a 50-50 chance. So even though mathematically it's true that you have more Amei Oretz who take Maaser than don't, Rava is saying, as far as the dinim of our Mishnah, that might not help us. But there's a different reason, because Hocha ba'ama Oretz did Rabbanon, the Tumah v'Tahar did Rabbanon. Because here we're talking about Reb Meir's definition of an Amei Oretz, where you have in different places in Shas, we're talking about an Amei Oretz, and you have Reb Meir's definition of it, and we're talking about a Tumah v'Tahara that it's only an issue did Rabbanon. So since it's only did Rabbanon, then the Chachamim can be matter it with Neidak Rishon. Meaning the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ezehu Amei Oretz. What is the definition of an Amei Oretz? We have many places in Shas where we have the definition of an Amei Oretz. It's relevant. For example, you're allowed to include them in a mezuman, and many other dinim. So Kol She'ein Oichel Chulin B'Tara. Divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says it's a person who is not careful to eat his chulin in a state of takla. So we're talking about, not obviously not nowadays where we're all tomei anyway, But back then, where people were able to be careful with Chumah V'Tahara, it was expected that a chover should be careful, not only to, obviously, as the Truma and Kodshim, he has to eat the Tahara, that's required on the Torah, but a chover, a Tamar Chacham, would be careful to eat even his Chorin, the Tahara. So if he doesn't, then Rameir says that brands him as an Amoritz. V'Chacham said when he doesn't take Meiser from his produce. So therefore, sort of mayor, in other words, is saying he may well be careful with truma and maestros. Nevertheless, he's still called an amoretz because he's not eating chulam batara. Well, that whole concept is only derabanan because midarad I see you don't eat chulam batara. So therefore, our mission would go like Rav Meir. So Rava is saying she does take maestro. You don't have a problem as far as that. The problem is just as far as truma batara. So therefore, no problem even helping her out with the preparing of the food until you reach the point where she's going to be matame it. By touching it, because at this point the dough is going to be wet and it's going to be makabel tumah. So at that point you can't help her anymore. But until then you would be fine, because the aveira that's involved over here would only be a dirabana. Again, according to Abaye, that's not the issue. According to Abaye, we would say that even when there's an isur daraisa involved, because Rav Amar it's ma'aser nehein, then we don't have much of a concern about that, because with daraisa we shouldn't have to be concerned. So that's an answer. But the Gemara says that doesn't work. But what about, though, the Mishnah continues, once the water is poured into the flour to start making the dough, then the Eishas Chover is not allowed to help the Eishas Amei Aretz anymore, because now it's Mukhshu B'Kabal Tumah. So now you're going to be helping with doing an Aveira. So what Aveira would it be? At this point, the Gemara is assuming the Aveira would be to make the Chulin Tomei. Well, then in that case, doesn't that imply that up till this point, we're not talking about issues of Tumah V'Tahara, we're talking about issues of Meiser. So that works out according to Abaya, but how would Rava explain it? That works out more according to Abaya. In the ratio, we're not concerned about Meiser, because Rav Amar or it's Ma'aser in hand. So actually, the question really would be on both of them. The question would really be, how are you telling me that in the ratio, the issue is that it's allowed on the grounds of Meiser? I guess the question really would be more on Rava than on Abaya. According to Abaya, fine, in the ratio, there's no concern of Meiser, and there's no concern of Tumah V'Tahara yet, there's not Makabel Tumah, so therefore you have no problem. In the Sefer, you've gotten to a point where it's Makabel Tumah, so then you have that concern. According to Rava, though, if you're concerned about Meiser as well, according to Rava, if you're talking about that he's not Oifel full of Batara, so the implication is that the reason why it would have been Osir up until that point, and it's only Mutim of Medar Kisholim, is not because of Tumah V'Tahara. The question would really be on both of them. Until now, there's no issu involved, neither of Maestris, according to Abaya, because Rav Amar or it's Maester in hand, or according to Rava, because we're talking about a person who's not suspect of not giving Maester in the first place. So in that case, why is there a problem in the beginning that the mission has to tell us? Meidav Kisholim, you're allowed to help. But what Meidav Kisholim? There's no Aveira here involved at all. The answer is Reisha V'Sefer V'Tumah V'Tahara, V'Reisha V'Tumah Schulim V'Sefer V'Tumah Schala. The answer is, we can answer both parts of the Mishnah are talking about Tumah V'Tahara, but the difference is, in the Reisha, the only problem is the Tumah of Chulin. Because, in other words, it's only Chulin. You haven't taken out Chala yet. So therefore, the only question is, are you helping her to make Chulin that's Tomei? So really, it should be also to do that, but the Chachamim are going to allow it, because it's only an Issur Dirabban. So she herself can't eat from it, Rashi explained, points out. But the fact is that she would be able to help with it. The Sefer, the Tumas Chala, whereas the Sefer, already we're talking about making the Chala Tomei, where Chala, Medar Daisi, you're not allowed to make it Tomei. Based on a Pesukos, Mishmeres Trumaisai, so then already, if she were to help her make that dough Tomei, if she were to help her prepare that dough, where now it's becoming Tomei, and the Chala that's in it is becoming Tomei as well, then you can't do that. Now, Tosfos points out that, I mean, you do have, the fact is that the challah is going to be taken out from it later. So wouldn't that be reason enough maybe to ask her it beforehand? The fact is Tosfos says there comes a point before you knead the dough, before you mix the, before you even put the water into the dough, if you take challah, nothing happens. That flour is not considered challah b'chlal. So therefore, so we have reason until actually water is put in, that it's not really chayav in challah, and therefore you can't talk about the challah that's eventually going to be taken out of it because there's no challah to speak of yet, because raw flour doesn't require challah yet. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss various other possibilities of why there'd be that difference. Okay. The Gemara continues. So the Gemara says a remin. So you're telling me both according to Abaya and Rava, you would be allowed to help out somebody who's eating chulin b'tumah, even though that's an issur d'rabbanan, you would be allowed to help them if nedaka shalom. Again, according to Abaya, this is a person who maybe we would have had to be concerned as careless about ma'isu as well, but we don't, because roi v'ama artis ma'isu nain, we can assume that this person belongs to the majority who do take ma'isu. According to Rava, we can't necessarily assume that, but we're talking about a person who we do know is careful about ma'isu, and the only thing they're not careful about is tumah v'tahara as far as chulin. Either way, it comes out according to either one of them that we would be allowed to help them with the chulin, even though it's coming tamei. But on a minute, the Gemara says I have a contradiction. A braisa says toichin a mafkidin etzel oichlish shvius. You are allowed to have your grain ground. So after Rashi points out, you've already taken truma and ma'aser from it, and now you're giving it to somebody to grind or mafkidin or to deposit for safekeeping etzel oichlish shvius, by people who are careful with the mitzvah of Shavuos, or people who are not careful, in other words. It's interesting. Rashi says, so Rashi is saying they are apparently suspect. We're talking about they're suspect of eating Shemitah fruit after the time, after Zman Abir. However, we don't suspect that they're going to exchange, that they're going to swap out the grain that you gave them with somebody else's, or that they're going to touch it. So you're allowed to have it ground by them or to deposit by them for safekeeping. Eitzel oichle shvius, by people who eat fruit of shvius when they're not supposed to after the time of the year. The eitzel oichle perisein b'tumah, as well as by people who are not careful to eat their chulin in tara. So we're not concerned that if you deposit it for them for safekeeping, then they're going to swap it out for other fruit, which is fruit of shvius or fruit that's tameh. Avoloi oichle shvius. But you're not allowed to grind the grain for oichle shvius. So those people who are choshed al shvius bring you grain to grind, you're not allowed to grind it for them, because again, that would be helping them to do an avera. And also not for people who eat their fruit b'tumah. So we see that you're not allowed to eat somebody who, you're not allowed to help somebody who eats chulin b'tumah. And yet we're saying that, Rava had said, we're talking about the person is careful about truma and mice, somebody's he's not even full of patada, and therefore we're saying that, the Mishnah was saying that you're allowed to help them, you're allowed to help them up until the point where water is being put into the flour, but here we say in the Braisa, you're not allowed to help them by grinding their flour or whatever. Amar Abaya, so Abaya answers, and the answer is not really needed according to Abaya himself. According to Abaya himself, there's no question, because we were talking about that there was a concern of Truma and Maisu, and here there's not the concern because Roy Vama Artis Master and Hain. But Abaya is going to give the following answer in order to explain how Rava would reconcile the Braisa. So Abaya answers, Hosam, Bakoyna, Foshad, Lifel, Truma, Bituma, Skinner. That Braisa is talking about not just a person who's suspect of eating his cholin b'tara. You're right, that might not be a problem to help them, like Rava says. The problem is here we have a Kohen who's suspect of eating truma in a state of truma. Dehavale truma d'araisa, then that's already an issu d'araisa to do that. So therefore, that would be the Braisa is saying, you're not allowed to help them, even with nedar b'sholem. So when it comes to cholin, where the problem is only d'rabbanan, then you'd be allowed to help them up until the point where it's actually mekabel tumah. But when it comes to an issur d'araisa, like eating truma, which is tameh, then not. Okay, the Gemara asks you, hochi mafkidin, then what do you mean that you're allowed to deposit by him for safekeeping? Or a minu? I have another braisa that contradicts that. A braisa says, mafkidin truma etzel yisrael amaret. We can deposit truma by Yisrael on Amaretz. We're not concerned that he's going to go start touching it because he's not used to it. He knows he's Yisrael. He can't eat truma. So therefore, so uh, So he's not going to worry. So we don't have to worry that he's going to touch it because he's going to know it's off limits to him. The lawyer, it's a koyin amoretz, but you're not allowed to deposit truma by a koyin amoretz because a koyin, after all, knows that he's able to eat truma. So he's not going to be concerned about the fact that he's tomei. He doesn't care. He being an amoretz, he doesn't care about that. Because he's familiar with truma, so therefore he might touch it. And he might make a tomei. So if you're telling me that the braisa that we quoted at the top of the Amud Tochen and Mafkid and Eitzel Oichlishvias and so forth is talking about Yisrael, okay. So the Mishnah is saying you can be Mafkid true, you can be Mafkid Chulin by you can be Mafkid Chulin by Yisrael who's suspect of eating this Peiros Betruma, because since it's only an Isur de Rabbanon to eat Chulin Tmeim, then we're not concerned about that. But not when it comes to a Koyan who's suspect of eating Truma because that's an issur d'oraisa. But if you're telling me, as Abaye just explained, that in order to make Rava's explanation work, that he's going to say, therefore, the braisa at the top of the Amud is talking about, the braisa at the top of the Amud is talking about giving it to a kohen who's choshev lechol truma, and therefore it's saying you can't help such a person out with preparing their food, because then you're meseyeye de over avera. But you are allowed to deposit your food with them. Why? This last braisa we just quoted says you can't deposit truma by a koyan who's an amoretz because he may make a tame because he being an amoretz, because he being a koyan, he's familiar with truma and he won't hold back from touching it. The answer is Omer Rav Ila, Chacham Ma'askin, Mekliheres Hamuk of Tzamid B'Sil. So Rav Ila says when you're talking about the first braisa that said you can deposit truma for safekeeping by a koyan, is talking about where that truma is located inside a Kliheres, which is covered with a tzamid posel. A kli cheres is metame only from the inside, only when truma touches or goes into the airspace of it does it become tame. And if it's covered and sealed with tzamid posel, with a covering that's tightly smeared on and airtight over it, then it can't be mekabel truma at all. You have, for example, in Parshas Chukas where it says v'chol kli cheres asher ein olav tzamid posel tomei v'u. So if it's such a thing is in an oil a mess, the contents will become tomei. But if it's with a tzamid posel, then it won't. So therefore, it's no problem if you put the truma inside a kedi that has a tzamid posel. Even if the tummy touches the outside of the keli, no problem. He wouldn't be metame anything that's inside the keli. So therefore you're good. The Rashba also adds the point that now we did say you're allowed to have him grind the grain for you. Here we would have to be talking about necessarily where yotzev and nichnas. You're constantly in and out, and therefore you can verify that he didn't touch it. But as far as Bikodin, you don't have that. Obviously, you're depositing it for Bikodin because you're not going to be able to hold it by you. But there, as long as it's summit in a summit parcel, then Rabbi Ila says, then you're good. The question is, fine, but don't you have the concern that the Amoritz's wife, while she's a nigger, may move that cave? Now, you have a din. There's a special kind of tumor that applies to a nigger and other kinds of, and other people like them as well, a zava, a yeledis, where all of them have the din that if they move a keli, then it becomes tame, even if they don't touch the keli, and even if it's a kli cheres hamuk of tzamid psil. So don't you have the problem? You're going to be masking this keli, which is this udenware keli, which has a tzamid psil on it, and you have truma inside it. You're going to be masked it by a koyin amoretz. Now, if you were masked it by Yisrael, you wouldn't need that, because we said Yisrael was not familiar enough with truma, and he's going to be afraid. He's not going to want to touch it. He knows truma is off limits to him anyway. But a koyin amoretz we're concerned that he might. Well, even if he himself can't get to it because it's a tzamid posel, but his wife might move it while she's in Nidya, and she'll make a tummy. Now, Tosfos points out that the fact is, Medirabbanan and amoretz is also metame. Things that he touches or things that he sits on, we consider him to be to a certain extent like a zog. Nevertheless, though, Tosfos says not to the extent we do. We say, for example, that anything he sits on or his clothing or whatever is metame midirabanan. We don't go so far as to say that if he's massive, that if he moves something, that it should also become tame. Like with a zog, that kind of thing. Tosfos says, ein revat sibu yichurim ma'amidrodim, but that sibu wouldn't be able to tolerate such a gzera if you made like that every single thing that a zov moves or every single thing that a zov sits on, whatever, has become tame, is going to become tame. So therefore, the chamim limited it to, for example, if an amoretz steps on clothes of a person who's tahor, for example, or his own clothes that he sits on, then they're going to be tame midirabanan, but not to the extent that we're going to treat him fully like a zov. But when his wife is a nidda, that's Daraisa, she has that din, that anything she moves becomes tame. So don't you have that problem? So that wouldn't work with a tzamid puzzle. Ela Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, so Rabbi Yirmiyah says, no, you can't answer that we're talking about Kli Cheres HaMok of Tzamid Psil. Loi Kasha, there's a different way of reconciling the Braises. We could say, after all, that the first Braise is talking about where the Koyan is choshed to eat Truma when it's tame. And the second one is saying, and saying that you are allowed to be masked fruit by him. And then the second one is saying that you can't. So how do we reconcile? Can the Paris Shal Hochshru, can the Paris Shaloi Hochshru? Because, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, there'd be a difference. In the first Braisa, we're saying, in the second Braisa, rather, we're saying the fruit that you're being mafkid is already mukhsh of a kabal tum. So therefore, so it was already became wet with one of the shiva mashkin. So now you have a concern that it's true, it might be makabal tumma, even if you put, so therefore, so that the aretz may touch it, or his wife may move it, or whatever, and therefore you have a problem. Can the Peres Shloi Mukhshru, as opposed to the first Braisa, is talking about they weren't yet Mukhshru Bakabal Tumma. So even the Amoritz touches them, or even his wife moves them, nothing happens. So therefore, you're allowed to leave it for safekeeping by them. So when it comes to their grain, Rashi explains the first Braisa still said you're not allowed to help them grind or sift it or whatever because you don't know whether their grain has been Mukhshru Bakabal Tumma. But here, where you know that your grain was not Mukhshru Lekabel Tumah, then you will be able to be masked that by an Amoritz. Okay, the Gemara says, in that case, Uraminu. Well, then in that case, we have another contradiction. Another Braisa says, Hamolach Chitin L'Toychen Kosi or L'Toychen Amoritz. If a person brings wheat to a Kosi miller or to an Amoritz miller, so a kusi, obviously, we're talking about back in the time when the kusim are not considered complete goyim. Nevertheless, though, they were careless, and they weren't considered goyim yet per se. But nevertheless, we know they were careless in many dinim, including the din of lifnei iver. They didn't hold that there's an iser to cause somebody else to do an iser. So therefore, so you have a concern that they might have swapped out your grain with other grain, which is not maaser, or which is also from shviyas or whatever. So Hamolach Chitin L'Toychen Kosi L'Toychen Amoretz. So in Amoretz, you have the same problem. Harei L'Bchaskosa M'Maisu L'Shvius. So they do have their chazaka as far as Maisu and Shvius. We don't suspect to the extent that they're going to swap it out with other produce that has not had Maisu taken or that was left over from Shvius. Avaloi B'Truma. But what we can't say as far as Truma, we have to be concerned that they touched it. Now, before we had a Braisa that's saying you are allowed to be mafkid the grain by an Amoritz. Here we're saying that you can't. So what's going on? So the Gemara says, what's the problem? Hi, my Rumia. What kind of an upshlug is that? Didn't we already say that there's a difference between whether the produce has been mukhshru kabel tumah or not? So very simple then. So whoever brought this Braisa in, what was he even thinking to ask? Obviously, this last Braisa is talking about that the fruit that is talking about that you have to be concerned that the Amoritz is or the Kosi's fruit is Mukhshru Lekabel Tumah. So you have to be concerned that he might have swapped out yours with his, as opposed to if we knew that his was not Mukhshru Lekabel Tumah, there wouldn't be a problem. So what are you even asking the question from the Braisa? It's obvious what the answer is. The Gemara says you're right. Mishum de Kabbalah Mumi Achriti Allah. The reason why the Makshin brought in this Braisa, though, is because he wanted to point out yet another Braisa that contradicts it. So yeah, this is the fourth Braisa that we're discussing now in the Sugya, where we're going to see that here the third Braisa that we just quoted says we don't have to be concerned about Maisu and Shavias, but we're going to have another Braisa that implies that you do. So therefore, he brought in this third Braisa, not in order to point out the contradiction between the two Braisas. Rather, it was he wanted to point out a contradiction between that Braisa and another one that we're going to bring now. So we said in the third Braisa, Harel b'chaskos in the Maisa or the Shvius, we said when you bring your grain to the Goyeship, to the Kusi miller, right? We said when you bring your grain to the Kusi miller or to the Amoritz miller, you don't have to be concerned about Meiser. You don't have to be concerned about Meiser and about Shavius. You can assume that you can assume that what you got back is the same grain that you got back, but you have to be concerned about Tuma, or maybe not. You have to be concerned maybe he swapped it out. But if he swapped it out, it wouldn't be for something that was not Meiser or that has a problem of Shavius. You wouldn't have to be concerned about that. There is actually a Tosfos elsewhere in Shas that explains Bechoris, that says that actually when we mean the Maisu or the Shvius, we mean we don't have to be concerned that this Amoritz, so this Kosi, is going to give you Maisu Sheni and pretend that it was Chore. If not, then if it was a question of whether his produce that he swapped it out for is ma'aser or not, Tosfos says the expression would be that you don't have to be concerned about d'mai, you don't have to be concerned about tevel. Anyway, the point is, or minhi, now I have a so-called chalufli loichashinan. So evidently then we're saying you don't have to be concerned that the miller swapped out your grain with somebody else's. So therefore, so you don't have to be concerned as far as ma'aser and shvius, or minhi. But now we have a contradiction because another braisa says, and noisin lachamoisai, suppose that a chover gives to his mother-in-law, he has dough that he prepared. She's a wife of an Amoret. Now she would be matama the dough, of course, when she prepares it. So Rashi explains that the chover has her go to the mikveh ahead of time before she starts preparing this food. So she won't be matame it, but nevertheless, so fine. So she won't make a tome, but Ma'aser is true noisema. He still has to take ma'aser from the dough before he gives it to her, because in case she keeps it for herself, you don't want him to, you know, he can't be causing her to eat food that wasn't ma'aser. The estro notale mena, and he also has to take ma'aser of what he gets back from her when she prepares the dough and bakes it for him. He's going to afterwards have to take ma'aser from it, because the concern is she may have switched it out for other dough of hers, which is not ma'aser, which we're not sure is ma'aser. So therefore, so he's going to have to take from that as well. Because we're concerned that she might swap out whatever's going to be wound. So in other words, it might be that his batch of dough is not so good, and she's going to instead give him a nicer batch. So she's going to instead give him bread that was baked from a nicer batch of her own dough. So don't we see from that an Amoretz is choshur on switching things out? So don't we have to be concerned that Amoretz is concerned about switching things out? So what are you telling me then in the third braisa that we don't have to be concerned about that? The answer is Hossam Katani Taimon. The reason is there, we were talking about a son-in-law and a mother-in-law. We have a special case, as it goes on to say in the Mishnah over there, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda explains, and by the way, in a Mishnah or in a Gemara, when you have Omar Pliny, usually it means he's not arguing, he's stating, as making a statement. So here, Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue with the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yehuda is coming to explain, why does the Tanakhama say that? Why would the Tanakhama say that the mother-in-law of the father is suspect of swapping out the bad dough for the good? Is because Rabbi Yehuda says, because she wants the best for her daughter. Her daughter, after all, is married to this guy, so she wants her to have the best possible food. And she's embarrassed of her son-in-law. She's embarrassed to give him bread that's no good. So in other words, it's not that she is maliciously swapping it out, thinking to herself, you know what, I'm going to give him food that wasn't ma'aser, or that was tamei or whatever, I'm going to be machshel them. No, she's giving them because she figures it's better for them. She's not concerned about ma'aser, she's not concerned about tumah v'tahara, but as far as she knows, she's a good Jewish mother and she wants the best for her daughter. So therefore, she wants to give her the best. So therefore, so in that kind of case, you have to be concerned that she might swap it out. But normally, we shouldn't have to be concerned. But the Gemara asks, so you're telling me only in the case of a mother-in-law are we concerned about that? What about Batnan? We have another Mishnah, also in Masechta Tmai, that says, it's actually the Mishnah before the previous one, that says, Hanosim Lepundikis. When you have a person staying by an inn, a Talmud who's learning out of town, so he stays by an Amoretz, he's boarding by an Amoretz, and the wife of the Amoretz is preparing his food for him. Same thing, Ma'aser is shown notes of Mother, shown notes of Himena. He has to take Ma'aser from whatever he gives her to prepare for him, as well as whatever he receives back from her, because it may not be the same thing, because there's the concern that she might swap it out. So you see that even not with a mother-in-law, even not with family, there is that concern of machlefes. So how can we be saying before that you can deposit your chulin or your truma by an amaretz and not to be concerned that it was switched out? The answer is they are also hosam mori of amra, because they are also, she's going to rationalize to herself. She's going to find a good reason why she should be doing this. She thinks, in other words, Rashi says that it's a mitzvah, but amra, she thinks to herself, ba'be rav lechol chamima. Better let the young Talmud Chacham eat the hot food I'll eat the cold food. In other words, Rashi says, so you may have 2 or 3 days may pass, and she'll figure, you know what, by now the Talmud Chacham's food is not so fresh anymore. Let me better give him some fresh food of my own. I don't mind eating the stuff that's a little bit out of date. It's only right that he should be able to have the fresh stuff. That's how Rashi feels. Tosfos doesn't like that because the word Murya is more, you know, doesn't imply the word Murya doesn't imply where she thinks that it's a mitzvah. For that, you would have a different expression. Rather, it means that she's rationalizing to herself, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, something that she's saying that it would be osur, but she's thinking, you know what, in this case, it's not so bad. It's fine for me to do a minor isur. So Tosfos actually brings the other way around. She's saying, is it right, that the young Talmid Chacham should be eating hot food and I should have to eat cold food? I'm working so hard for him. So in other words, she may rationalize for herself, the Talmid Chacham just gave me fresh food to prepare for him. How is it right? I'm doing so much work for him that he should have the fresh, hot food and I should have the cold food. No, I'm going to swap it out. He can have the cold stuff. He can have the out-of-date food. So you have, in other words, she's going to rationalize and think that there's a valid reason to do that. Whereas when it comes to you giving a pikudin to somebody, they're not doing any work for it, so they can't rationalize to themselves that they should have a reason to swap it out. Okay. The Gemara says, still, you're telling me that nobody else other than a mother-in-law or a pundikis, where the mother-in-law, okay, is looking out for her daughter-in-law, for his daughter's benefit, and the pundikis is, according to Rashi, looking out for her daughter's benefit, and according to Tosfos, the other way around, is figuring, you know what, he owes me one. Anyway, you're telling me, but in other cases, there wouldn't be a concern of swapping out. Well, Tanya, we have it at Braisa. Eishes chaver techenesim eishes amaretz. A wife of a chaver is allowed to grind grain together with the wife of an amaretz, bizman she tmeya, when the eishes chaver herself is tamei anyhow. So now we're talking about food that Rashi explains at a time like that. Now the eishes chaver occasionally is going to be tamei as well. She's going to sometimes be nida, etc. So at times like that, she's used to already to not touch taras. So therefore, we're not concerned that she might eat some of the food while she's working. Tosfos says, one second, we said before that according to Rava, at least you're not supposed to, she's not supposed to be helping at that point because we have to be concerned that you have Amei Aretz who don't take Maaser, and we said you can't actually help with that. If we're talking about over here, that's a concern where she's not taking Maaser, then you have that. And also Tosfos points out a number of other problems with that. Anyway, so Tosfos explains that what we mean is we're talking about the produce belongs to a cover. So now the Eishes HaMaaretz is helping her out with grinding that. So she'd be allowed to. So the point is that when it says Bizman Shitmeya means when the Eishes HaMaaretz knows that she's tamei. So then she's careful not to touch it at a time when she's going to be making it tamei. But Bizman Shi Tahora would mean when she considers herself, like most Amei Aretz do, well, I'm Tahora, what's the problem? I didn't touch anything that's Tomei, and they, of course, don't know Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. So then she shouldn't, because we're concerned that she may touch it. So that's according to Tosfos. Bizman Shi Tmeya, Avaloi Bizman Shi Tahora, according to Tosfos, would mean when the Eishes Amei Aretz considers herself Tomei versus when she considers herself Tahora, as opposed to, again, according to Rashi, it would mean when the wife of the chaver is tamei versus when she's tamei. Reb Shimon Elazar af bizman shi tamei al titvein. Reb Shimon Elazar says even when she's tamei, she shouldn't grind together with her. Because the friend will give her some of it and she'll eat it. So don't we have a concern then? Doesn't that show Rashi says that the Eishes HaMaaretz is actually suspect of taking some of her husband's property, which is after all the grain that they're grinding belongs to her husband, and give it to her friend without her husband's permission? That's according to Rashi, that's the concern. And again, according to Tosfos, the concern is that the Eishes HaMaaretz is going to touch the grain, is going to touch it, make it tamei, and give some to the Eishes Chaver, and the Eishes Chaver is going to eat it without realizing.
Didn't we learn other places that when you're doing work in the field, you're allowed to eat while you're working?
That's what the Gemara is going to answer now. One second, yeah. That's very good. That's the Gemara is going to mention exactly that point. But anyway, so Tosfos is saying, no, so actually what it is that Tosfos says, the question is, again, it is a matter of gezel. If she's even suspect of eating some of the, according to Tosfos that we're talking about, this grain belongs to the chaver, and the Eishes chaver brought it over to her neighbor, the Eishes HaMaaretz, to help her grind it. and the Eishes Chover. So what are we concerned that the Eishes Amoritz may take some of that grain, some of that whatever they were working on, and eat from it herself? So we see she'd be choshered on gezel. So wouldn't she also be choshered on swapping it out? And the answer is Amar Abayis Hasam Nami Moria. There also, it's because she may make an excuse for herself. She may rationalize for herself and say, as you just said, but Omer, she's going to say to herself, "Look, Torah Medisha Ka'achel, the ox is allowed to eat from what it's threshing." So I'm allowed to eat from what I'm working on. It's not considered gezel. So in that case, then therefore we say you might not technically have the din that she'd be allowed to eat from it at that point, because that only applies, that din of being allowed to eat from what you're working on only applies in certain cases. In particular, it doesn't apply once it's already nigmar malachta l'maaser, once the processing of it is already finished as far as maaser, and here it is, because it was already made and it was already, the grain was already husked and it was made into, it was, miruach was done and everything. So that din wouldn't apply, but nevertheless, she may rationalize to herself and say, I should be allowed to, and therefore she'll think that it won't be gezel. That doesn't show that in other cases. So in other words, so far what we're saying is any time that the Amoritz might have reason to rationalize that it's valid for me to swap out this person's food with my own. So in the case of a mother-in-law who figures that my daughter have the better food, in the case of a kundikis, where according to Rashi, she figures let my guests have the better food, and according to Tosfos, she may say the other way around, I'm the one who works so hard, I should have the better food. In the case of the Eishes Amoritz over here with the grinding, where she's going to think I'm working on it right now, therefore I should be entitled. Then we say choshed lahachlif. Then we have to be concerned that they might switch it out, and therefore we have questions of tumah v'tahara. But in other cases where none of that applies, then yes, you would be allowed to deposit produce by an Amoritz in a way where you know that he didn't touch it, and you don't have to be concerned that he'll swap it out because he doesn't have any rationalization to do that. So that's that. So by that, we've reconciled all the various Mishnayos and Braises on this subject. So now we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll talk more about these dinim of what kind of work you're allowed and not allowed to do with an Amoritz in terms of preparing food in a way that, again, you have concerns of Tumah V'Tahara. So how do you avoid those?
Shikayach.